Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
I realize the casual observer might see the show topic today and think that we're about to embark on this sort of dark and serious and somber journey through some really depressing stuff. But stick with me, okay? Because to the surprise of a great many people, our romp through the wild witch hunt of the 70s, 80s, and 90s is actually, for the most part, a lot of fun. Okay, it's a lot of fun. Now, for those who were the products of that time period, it's going to be a walk down memory lane, I have a feeling, especially for those who are ex-Christians or who were raised in or around the Bible Belt. And for those who were not products of this particular, you know, season of fear-mongering, you are going to wonder if I've just lost my mind, if I'm making these stories up out of whole cloth. But I assure you, what you're about to experience is absolutely real. It absolutely happened. It is my speech from October the 22nd, given at Orlando's Florida Freethought Conference. It's called The Satanic Panic, The Witch Hunt of the Late 20th Century. Okay? And a great tie-in to today's show about evil is a lecture series at the Great Courses Plus. It's by Dr. Charles Matthews. He's a professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia. Yeah, he teaches religious studies, but he also takes what I think is a pretty fair and even-handed approach to a lot of what has been represented as evil throughout recorded human history, from the mythical celestial forces of light and darkness to the Bible's framing of evil, with the antagonist of Satan, to Lucifer as drawn by Milton in the 17th century, to Nietzsche's urgings for society to completely rethink its definitions for morality and good and evil, represented in countless ways. How do we define evil? And how do we as human beings face it? Well, the lecture, Why Evil Exists, by Professor Charles Matthews, is just one of over 8,500 lectures on a huge variety of subjects that can stream or download directly to your TV, computer, laptop, or smartphone. And they are giving my listeners an entire month of unlimited access to all of their lectures, all of them, on the library for free for a full month. So you can try it out for yourself, but you have to sign up with my special URL. So enhance your education and get started right now. Sign up at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. FYI, the broadcast next week is going to be a series of what I think is going to be hugely compelling conversations between myself and people who are not atheists. These are people who are perhaps doubting, maybe they've come out of faith, but not fully out of faith. Maybe they don't believe, but they don't like the term atheist. They don't want that for themselves. Maybe they are those people who say, well, I'm not religious, but I am spiritual, or it's not a religion, it's a relationship type of thing. People who are not atheists who wanted to come on the show and talk about their own doubts, their own questions, their own challenges when it comes to the idea or even label of atheism. We're going to have those conversations next week, and I think you're going to find it a very entertaining and compelling show. Okay? So mark that one on your day timer. And before I play you the audio of my speech from Free Flow in Orlando, October 22nd, I will say, more than any speech I have given, I think ever, in any context, this speech was the most visuals heavy I've ever done. And while most of it does work for radio, there are some punchlines you are going to miss. You're going to hear people laughing and wonder why. It's okay. Most of it translates, but you will want to go back and watch the video. I have a ton. I must have had 160 different slides and or video clips in this sucker. The video, the YouTube link is in the description box of the broadcast. So enjoy the radio version. Eventually, you will want to watch the YouTube version. And here it is from the Florida Freethought Conference. My speech, The Satanic Panic, The Witch Hunt of the Late 20th Century.
It is always such an honor to be a part of these types of events. I can't tell you what it means to me to be here, but it's also an important thing that I'm here, my friends, because I have come with a warning. A warning about a creature that has spawned from the depths of hell. And even now it moves and weaves among us, unleashing its dark and destructive energy. It is. Oh, yeah. It's Pokemon, the pocket monster. Pokemon was introduced by Nintendo back in the mid-90s on the Game Boy originally, and it almost instantly became a global phenomenon. In fact, games featuring Pokemon have been featured on almost 300 million copies sold in the last two decades. But almost immediately upon its release, initial release back in the mid-1990s, the God Squad was crying foul. They were freaking out. Here's a classic clip I'm about to play you from a television evangelist. His name is Phil Arms of Life Reach Ministries in Pasadena, Texas, and he had this warning.
So Pokemon is a game that teaches children how to enter into the world of witchcraft, how to cast spells, how to use psychic phenomena, how to put work supernatural powers against their enemies, how to fantasy role play. Pokemon World is a world of the demonic, of the satanic. But while you might not take it quite seriously, I assure you that demons take it quite seriously. Satan takes it quite seriously.
Oh, you laugh. But demons take it seriously. The devil takes it quite seriously. This guy is Matt Slick. He's the president of CARM, the Christian Apologetics and Research Ministry. He had posted an article in 2007, still available on the CARM website with an update that released last year, asking the question, Pokemon, what is it? And more importantly, is Pokemon dangerous? The answer coming down being yes, potentially it is. It conditions the child who plays the game into accepting occult and evolutionary principles. You see that? The occult and the hard science of evolution. Is Pokemon dangerous? Potentially, yes, it is. Still quoting from Matt Slick, or paraphrasing, Haunter. Haunter can hypnotize you. He can eat your dreams and drain your energy. That's a satanic power. Abra is a mind reader. That's dark magic. Kadabra emits negative energy that harms other people. Ghastly can make you go to sleep. Gengar laughs at your fright. Nidoran uses poison. Many of these creatures evolve, helping to sell to kids this satanic lie of evolution. In fact, in one of the games here is an incarnation of a Pokemon that's actually evolving, I'm sure, in the exact fashion that Charles Darwin wrote about in On the Origin of Species, you know, with flash and levitation and lightning and this instantaneous transform, like a Cambrian explosion of Pokemon is kind of what we're seeing. Back to the CARM article, the children are taught to use these creatures to do their will by invoking colored energy cards, fights, and commands. Much of it is reminiscent of the occult and Eastern mysticism. Well, the warnings continue from preachers like this guy, Rick Wiles. Now, Rick hosts the ironically named True News radio show. Just think of an unholy union between William Lane Craig and, say, Alex Jones. And you have Rick Wiles, okay? Well, last year he warned that Satan was using Pokemon Go to target churches with virtual, digital, cyber demons. He went on to declare that he believed Pokemon Go was a magnet for demonic powers. This was not 20 years ago. This was just recently. There was rampant talk among Christians in Christian circles about a Time magazine article that had come out with the creator of Pokemon, Satoshi Tajiri, where he admitted to Time magazine that Pokemon had demonic influence. The story said that the games were created as a backlash against his Christian parents, tailored toward an anti-Christian sentiment or Satanism. Holy shit, it's the smoking gun, right? The creator of Pokemon told Time magazine outright that it's a tool of the devil. Now, those of us who are products of the 70s, 80s, and early 90s remember similar warnings about the devil's influence in pop culture. It was a time of fear. It was the season of the witch, now affectionately referred to as the Satanic Panic. Christians across the U.S., and I was one of them, I was a believer at the time, Christians across the United States and around the world were in full freak-out mode about the devil. Satan sneaking into the culture, targeting our children, often before they're even teenagers. This was a series of books, a couple of books sold in Christian bookstores nationwide by an author named Phil Phillips. 1986's book, Turmoil in the Toy Box, and then the follow-up from 1991, Saturday Morning Mind Control, which addressed Saturday morning cartoons. Phil Phillips had this warning to parents.
Yes, there's a vast movement toward the occult within the cartoon and toy industry. Most people don't realize that 80% of all cartoons deal directly with the occult, and 40% of the toys on the market have occultic influence, and these are the most popular.
80% of all cartoons and 40% of all toys are in some way satanic. And he gave some examples. Now, these are my graphics, but they are taken from his specific illustrations. For example, He-Man. If He-Man is master of the universe, who must be dethroned as the master of the universe? Of course, it is God, Yahweh, Jesus. How about Rainbow Bright? Oh, yeah. Rainbow Bright is a franchise that was introduced by Hallmark back in 1983. This looks innocent enough, but looks can be so deceiving.
Well, here's a Rainbow Bright cereal box. And, I mean, what are you saying about Rainbow Bright?
Again, it's a humanistic emblems and humanistic value system.
Well, the rainbow represents the networking of the New Age.
Right.
And it's interesting that she has a little five-sided star on her cheek. I don't know if you can see that on the box, but there's a little five-sided star, and it's upside down, which I'm not going to say it's used in this depiction, but that's a pentagram again.
Yes.
And that's another New Age and occultic symbol. So we have to be careful even with Rainbow Bright.
Oh, yeah, you got to be careful with Rainbow Bright. Hey, what's another beloved franchise of our youth that might be infected with Satan? How about Star Wars? I know, is nothing sacred, yet Star Wars is loaded with devilry.
Characters like Darth Vader, who look almost exactly like the ancient Norse god Odin, and Obi-Wan Kenobi, and there's a form of witchcraft called Obi-Witchcraft, in which chanting Obi, Obi, Obi over and over again releases the power into the witches' lives.
You're saying that these were actually taken, this was taken from a Norse god who looked very much like him?
Yes, it looks a lot like Darth Vader.
What are they talking about? Darth Vader looks nothing like the depictions of Odin. It makes no sense. And yet it does not stop there, my friends. We thought Yoda was a good guy. Yoda! And yet, he is in fact an ally of Satan. According to Phil Phillips, he represents the three-fingered, three-toed beast, an agent of Beelzebub. You want to see another army of satanic characters that have come to destroy your children? Oh, yeah. Oh, you got to check out this. You got to just watch this. Just watch the screen. Just watch the screen.
But there are some things about Smurfs that we need to look at. First of all, you'll notice that they're depicted as blue with black lips.
Well, isn't that interesting?
And you know what happens to you when you die? You turn blue and your lips turn black.
In other words, these are depictive of dead creatures.
Right. And another thing is that Smurfs is an all-male community. And you say, oh, there's Smurfette. She's a female. Well, in one cartoon, she was depicted as transforming from a male to a female through magical power. And so the only female in the Smurfs is transformed from a male. She was not born a female.
No, what you're telling me then is that even Smurfs carry a homosexual connotation in that most of them are male.
I believe so.
Was anybody in this room, and I'll do a show of hands, anybody in this room ever warned about these? Oh, yeah. This is an early version of Advanced D&D or Dungeons and Dragons. Raise your hand if you've ever been a druid, a paladin, sorcerer, warlock, anybody. Oh, you are all going straight to hell. You didn't just play a game. You weren't just playing a game. You were tearing into the portals between dimensions. You were opening the spirit world and inviting dark magic, even Satan himself, into your lives. And this was the conversation back in the 80s that was happening not just in the United States, but globally. I mean, whole articles were written, studies were done. Is this just harmless fun, or is it witchcraft? Is D&D a tool for injecting Satanism into the lives of our young people? Anybody here know what Chick Tracks are? From Jack Chick? Well, if you're not familiar, Jack Chick was a... Man, shit, crazy. But Jack Chick was a guy who produced these tiny little Christian comics. And they were distributed by the hundreds of millions, and they had all these wild messages, more than just fundamentalist Christian. They were just really wild and interesting little comics that were put under windshield wipers and dropped on sidewalks and stuck in Halloween trick-or-treat bags, and people just gave these everywhere. Well, there was one produced by Chick Tracks in 1984 called Dark Dungeons. This specifically related to the phenomenon of D&D. And this story warned about the dangers of the game, featuring two major characters. The first character, her name is Debbie. Debbie played the game, and she was a natural. Debbie was so good that the dungeon master at one point said, "You are so awesome at this. I think it might be time to learn, to teach you, rather, how to do magical spells in real life." "Oh, gosh, you're going to teach me the real power?" She says, "I think you have the personality for it now." And as is so true in real life, she then took Debbie off to a witch's coven, where she was trained to become a priestess of the craft, and her name was changed to Elfstar, which I think sounds like a minivan. But anyway, the second character's name was Marcy. Marcy was playing D&D, and Marcy died in the game. You know, you play a video game, your character dies, you play a game, you die, you're out. Well, Marcy was playing D&D, and her character died, and she went into a fit, a funk of depression. And so Debbie goes over to her house and said, "Marcy wanted me to come by tonight. I'm so glad you're here," Marcy's mother says. "She just hasn't been herself since her character died in the game. Maybe you can go up to her room and talk some sense into her." But alas, when Debbie goes upstairs, what does she find but Marcy, who has hanged herself from a light fixture in her own bedroom? The narrative was Dungeons and Dragons. Jesus Christ, you might as well give your kids a loaded handgun. This is dangerous stuff. This guy's name is John Todd. He was featured as a character in several Chick Tracks, but John Todd was also a real guy. He was a real guy who said that he, as a believer, was once a member of, wait for it, the Illuminati. Now, if you're not familiar with the Illuminati, just picture in your mind Spectre from all the James Bond films. All right, this organization that's everywhere, controlling everything. This secret society that has the puppet strings to world governments and private corporations, the Illuminati. This is actually the cover of John Todd's 1980 quote-unquote autobiographical story of his escape from the Illuminati. Well, John Todd said in one Chick Track that the most powerful spells hitting Christian homes come through rock music, and that's why we must burn those records tonight. And in the 80s, during the Satanic Panic, we did see a lot of churches, their youth groups would bring albums out, rock albums, and they would have album burnings. People would tell the horror stories. And we believed them because we'd been brainwashed, indoctrinated, conditioned to believe. We threw the album in the fire, and we heard the sounds of screaming. And we saw spirits that sort of came up out of the smoke and went into the sky, and everybody had a story, right? Burn the witch was the message being taught to us. Expose and condemn and call out these agents of satanic sorcery among us. Agents like these guys. Oh, yeah. This is not a rock band. This is not entertainment. This is an attack against all that is good and righteous. These guys flick their devilish tongues. They breathe fire. They vomit blood. They have satanic orgies back in the green rooms and spit their devilry in the face of Jesus Christ. We were told that KISS wasn't just a band name, but it actually stood for something. Anyone know what this was supposed to stand for? Just shout it out. I'm not crazy. We believed, we were told and believed that KISS stood for Knights in Satan's Service. This was clear and irrefutable proof that Satan wanted to rock all night and party every day. I love this shot from Tenacious D. It's just hysterical. Rock music, the devil's playground. Anybody else warned about this guy? Ozzy Osbourne? Ozzy got his start back in 1968 as the frontman for the English rock band Black Sabbath, their moniker alone, an affront to God. Their debut album cover featured this creepy woman, alleged by many to be a real-life witch. Over the years, Christians reeled at songs like Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, and Children of the Grave, and Lady Evil, and so many others. Also in on the satanic conspiracy, there was Iron Maiden. Anybody warned about Iron Maiden? Number of the Beast album. Alice Cooper, absolutely satanic. We were, and this is true, warned about Stevie Nicks, that she was a witch, that she practiced witchcraft during her concerts. So beware, don't ever attend a concert because they practice witchcraft at Stevie Nicks shows. We were told that AC/DC was not just a band name, but actually stood for Antichrist, Devil's Child. You want more proof that the devil was trying to destroy popular music in the 80s? I mean, is nothing sacred, my friend? I'm just kidding. I actually really liked Don Johnson as a man, as an actor, you know. But when he came out with Heartbeat in 1986, and I just happened upon this image in a Google search, and I was like, I must put him in my presentation, and I don't know why. So it just seemed to fit. Anyone here familiar with backward masking? Okay. Bands ranging from Queen to Deep Purple to Slayer to the Eagles were alleged to be hiding subliminal messages in the grooves of their albums, hidden messages in their songs. So you play the album forward, you hear the lyric song as intended, but you stop and you roll that album backward with your stylus. You may hear something, you may uncover some subliminal message, a satanic message that's supposed to infect your brain. Now, this is going to weird a few people out, but I'm going to actually play some examples of backward masking for you. Now, I want you to take yourself back into my childhood. What was it like being raised in the cocoon of religious fundamentalism, where we were taught the absolutely true Bible and everything was spiritual warfare? We were living in the end times. Jesus could come back at any moment. Satan was everywhere. We were conditioned, brainwashed to believe this stuff to be true. And we were genuinely afraid of the devil. I was in sixth grade in Mrs. Keck's homeroom class. They brought an expert in the occult. And they actually stopped the class and they took all the sixth grade students into another room with this guy. And he played cassettes and albums and whatnot. He played these songs backwards and warned us about the evils that were out there and encouraged us to burn all of our rock music, or at least throw them out to get rid of them. Okay? We were preconditioned to be afraid. Keep that in mind as we listen to these examples. Electric Light Orchestra, ELO, the English rock band formed in 1970. Their 1974 song, El Dorado, was played backwards by somebody for some reason, and they found a quote-unquote hidden message, discovered only when the song was played in reverse. For reference, here it is in the correct direction.
Here it comes, I got a lonely day. Playing the game, I'll sail away on a voyage of no return to sea.
All right, what happens when we take that exact same clip and we play it backwards? What might we find?
Used to
his first girlfriend on the west side. Me and Devin, yeah, I didn't want to look like that as much to me.
Everyone who has the mark of the beast, lives. Somebody was trying way too hard with this one, right? Anybody familiar with patternicity and all that is way in front of me, but let's continue. We were warned about the Beatles' counterculture influence and their ties to darker satanic themes. One specific song, which contained hidden messages, was Revolution 9 from the White Album. Played forward, it sounds like this.
Number 9, number 9. Number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9.
Played in reverse, what might be found? Eroticism with the dead, what could be more satanic than that? Was this just an experiment in sound design, or was this the devil's work? My friends. Of course, the Beatles were already on Christianity's radar after John Lennon's controversial comments 2 years earlier. He was doing an interview with the London Evening Standard, and he said that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus at that time. Well, listeners in the UK heard this, and they didn't care at all. But Christians in the United States freaked out, and many of them added the Beatles to their satanic blacklist. Let's do another one real fast. Arguably the most iconic rock song of the 20th century by Led Zeppelin. When I was a teenager, I was told that this song had a hidden meaning, hidden in reverse. In the grooves of the song, here's the clip forward. Now, let's play that same clip in reverse. Okay. Well, it took about 5 minutes before clever music marketers realized that they could get a ton of publicity if they purposefully started adding backward messages in these rock songs. And that's what they did. People started backward masking on purpose. Hell, there was even a Christian band that did it. Petra's album, Judas Kiss, has a backward section. It's obviously backward mask. And when you play it in reverse, it says, what are you looking for the devil for when you ought to be looking for the Lord? That's what the backward masking was. It was so ubiquitous, Weird Al Yankovic got in on it. He did it a few times. On his 1984 album, In 3D, he put it on his Nature Trail to Hell song. Can I play you the clip from Weird Al? All right, here's Weird Al Yankovic backward masking. Yeah. Satan eats cheese whiz. But satanic rock music had become the scapegoat for pretty much every horrible headline on the planet. If it was going wrong with your kids, go in their bedroom, look at their album collection, find out what they're listening to, what are they putting in their ears. The sounds in their head, the voices, the influence might very well be coming from Satan. And I totally got my buddy Aaron Ross permission to use his face for this image, okay? It was a surreal phone call. I called him up. I'm like, hey, what's going on, bro? Oh, I'm good. Hey, would you be the devil? Okay. No, my. Remember, this was in many ways a generation already inclined to paranoia and religion-fueled indignation. It was the time of Jerry Falwell, and the moral majority, they warned about an America falling into the clutches of permissiveness and self-indulgence and rebellion and wickedness, right? The mid-80s saw the height of the controversy about sex, drugs, and violence represented in the lyrics of pop music, rock music. We saw Tipper Gore and other people established, the PMRC, the Parents Music Resource Center. There were Senate subcommittee hearings. This is Dee Snider of Twisted Sister, Frank Zappa. John Denver was there, all testifying before the Senate subcommittee. Judas Priest was sued after two guys got drunk and shot themselves in a suicide pact. The grieving families found Judas Priest music in their rooms or whatever and decided the band was responsible. Took them to court. This is singer Rob Halford on the witness stand in 1990. The case was dismissed by a judge. It was the time of the Night Stalker, the serial killer, Richard Ramirez, back in 1984-85, killed 16 in California. He said that the AC/DC song Night Prowler inspired him to prowl, to sneak into people's homes at night. Another smoking gun in the Satanic Panic conversation. The Beatles' Helter Skelter was alleged to be the inspiration for the Manson murders of 1969. Remember, Charles Manson led a murderous commune, killed actress Sharon Tate and four other people in August of 69. Remember that the 60s and the 70s saw the rise of the celebrity serial killer, from Manson to the Son of Sam, the Zodiac, John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy, and others. All of this feeding into a public attitude of fear. It was the time of The Exorcist. Now, it's hard for us to take ourselves back to 1973 when the film released based on the book, but at the time, people considered it to be genuinely cursed and demonic, people running out of the theater, believing they had witnessed a piece of hell itself. It's hard for us to go back that far because we're so jaded by the horror films and the culture and whatnot. Back then, this was considered satanic. 1982 saw the Tylenol murders. Anyone remember this? Somebody put cyanide into bottles of Tylenol, prompting a national panic. In fact, Tylenol actually was pulled from every shelf in the United States. And this is where they developed the safety caps for our medicines. Something good came out of the tragedy, but people felt really paranoid. I mean, they couldn't even trust their own medicine. Anybody remember the Procter & Gamble scandal? Christians everywhere, believe it or not, Christians everywhere stopped buying Procter & Gamble products, and they make everything from toothpaste to whatever, all right? Because their logo looked like this. It was a half moon with 13 stars, and this was said to be satanic. There's a horn at the top and the bottom of the half moon. The 13 number's always bad. And in the bottom of the beard on the right or along the edge of the coin, that is supposed to be an inverted 666. And so Christians began boycotting Procter & Gamble. All right, at one point they were fielding, I think, 10,000 phone calls a month at Procter & Gamble because people believed they were satanic. There was a story that was going around about the president of P&G appearing on Phil Donahue's daytime talk show in 1994, declaring proudly that he was a Satanist and he donated millions to the Church of Satan, and P&G was so big he wasn't worried about the repercussions. This was a thing in Christian culture, right? Procter & Gamble's in league with the Church of Satan and its founder, Anton LaVey, a scary person. The father of Satanism, the Black Pope, the evilest man in the world, Anton LaVey, author of the Satanic Bible, a book that none of us had actually read, but we knew was the worst thing in the universe, okay? And when I was a believer, if somebody brought one over, it's like they'd showed up at my front door and said, I can have a Satanic Bible, you got to see this, it's crazy. There's a good chance I would not have allowed them into my house because I believed it was like some sort of a carrier for dark supernatural energy. It was the foundational book for LaVey's Church of Satan, which was founded in 1966, this satanic cult which prowled the shadows of polite society. It kidnapped babies. It sacrificed animals. It gave Jesus the middle finger at every turn. What was the favorite holiday for the Church of Satan?
Halloween.
Halloween. Anybody here warned about Satan's holiday when you were a believer? A few of you? We heard horror stories about Halloween. This guy, actually, his name is Mike Warnke. He proclaimed that he was a former Satanist high priest. a drug user and Satanist high priest, and he did a Christian perspective on Halloween, talking about all the horrible sacrifices and all the satanic ties to Halloween. Mike Warnke had written an autobiography released in 1978 called The Satan Seller. He said he was a Satanist high priest, and they, you know, cut people's fingers off, and they had satanic orgies, and they, you know, animal sacrifice, all these horrible things. And then he found Jesus, and he became a very popular Christian comedian. In fact, he founded and headed up for a long, long time a multi-million dollar quote-unquote ministry. He wrote the Schemes of Satan book that was released in 1991, more on Satan's attack on humanity. But on Halloween, I mean, that's the day, right? That's the day where you want to lock yourself up because satanic rituals are practiced on Halloween. It's the day you got to check your kids' Halloween bags because people are putting razor blades and apples. The Satanists want your kids in the emergency room, and they were going there by the thousands. It's horrible. Whatever you do on Halloween, make sure you lock up your black cat. Lock up your cat. The Satanists are out there. They're going to get your cat. And they're going to go sacrifice your cat on the altar. By the way, speaking of cats, and I just thought this was funny, I saw a meme on the internet or a poster, a graphic, a comic, whatever you want to call it, that showed a cat and said, every time a cat cleans itself, it is worshiping the Dark Lord. And you can see the five-pointed cats. Like if there really was proof of the devil, it might be the cat. I've got a cat at home, and I love him. His name is Cat. We spell it with a K. His name is Cat. He just might be an agent of the devil. I get that one. Why do you think Dana Carvey's Church Lady resonated so much with the population? Right? On Saturday Night Live. Why did this take off? Because they had tapped into the culture. I don't know. What is it out there? Satan, maybe? Right? That's how people were speaking. The constant warnings by the Bible bangers about Satan, Satan, Satan. I was in junior high in a private Christian school when they warned us about Satan by showing us these films. They're often called the Thief in the Night series. There's more than three. I think there's at least four. But they showed us the three. Christian school, they brought us all in for quote-unquote chapel, which was church service. And they lowered the lights and they showed us these films about the end times. And it took kind of the basic tribulation narrative. At the blink of an eye, without warning, Christians across the planet disappear. They go to heaven, right? Jesus comes back. There was no actual trumpet in the film. The Christians were just gone like that. And the non-believers were left behind. And according to many theologians, Jesus then gives control of the planet to his nemesis, Satan, and lets Satan run the earth for 7 years. Why? I have no idea. And then Jesus comes back after 7 years, after the meat grinder of the tribulation, and then Jesus reigns on earth for 1,000 years, for a millennia, and then he finally destroys Satan. And some people say Jesus makes the earth a new heaven, but most theologians I've heard in Protestant Christian churches say we then go off to heaven. But that's kind of what happens. Jesus comes back, the seven-year trib, then Jesus reigns on earth for a millennium, and then it's heaven. Well, according to the films, the tribulation happens. It's not too late to accept Jesus if you miss the rapture. It's just that you have to endure the tribulation if you choose Jesus after he comes back the first time. There's a one world government depicted by these guys in nasty looking sunglasses and uniforms with a van called Unite, a one world government. You guys see that going on there? And they travel around and they force people to take the mark of the beast, the satanic mark on their hand or on their forehead. If you refuse and say, no, I choose to follow Jesus, they then take you to a public square and they execute you by guillotine. I was a child when they brought me into the auditorium and they lowered the lights and they showed me the future. They showed me all three films that talked about people being beheaded in a public square because they didn't choose Jesus. And there were monsters and all manner of just agony and pain and insanity and chaos. And at the end, when the lights came up after the film, they looked at us with a straight face and said, now who would like to come forward and accept Jesus Christ as their personal Savior? Tears in our eyes, we were shaking, our lips were quivering, we were hugging each other. We were traumatized. This is child abuse. It's one of the things that drives much of the work that I do. I'm desperate to see these kids not have to go through this sort of thing. 1980 saw the release of a best-selling book, which for many was the cornerstone of the Satanic Panic, called Michelle Remembers, about this girl named Michelle, who had gone to see a psychiatrist, and he had uncovered repressed memories. Uh-oh. Memories where she was subjected to satanic ritual abuse. She was tortured, locked in cages. She was sexually assaulted. She went through rituals, some lasting 80 days. She witnessed murder. Just horrible stuff. She didn't really remember it, but he was able to extract the repressed memory, and then they collaborated on a best-selling book that the entire freaking Christian culture bought without fact-checking. And we saw a lot of articles going on about satanic ritual abuse, usually involving young children. I just got to show you this. This was a video produced and targeted to law enforcement, teaching cops how to deal with satanic ritual abuse. This one called The Law Enforcement Guide to Satanic Cults. It was hosted by Gordon Coulter, former police officer turned pastor. Now, this film is creepy, but it's not creepy for the reasons that they intended, okay? In fact, for that reason, if I may, I would like to retitle this video clip. I would like to call it Uncle Gordy Wants to Make You a Video Star, okay? And I have added my own on-screen commentary at the bottom. Here we go.
In investigating homicides, there are some very obvious ritualistic markings that will appear on a body that is the result of satanic killings. But some of the markings are a little more subtle. And so what we're going to do is give you an illustration of this on our model and also retrace some of the markings that were in the St. Joseph's case. You'll note on our model that there's oftentimes a cut that goes from behind the ear all the way down to the throat. Another area that's obvious in these kinds of ritualistic carvings would be the pentagram or the inverted pentagram on the right and the left side of the upper chest. This oftentimes is the signature of the high priest. Another area that you might find satanic ritual carving is in the stomach area. And as was true in the St.
All right, we laugh about this stuff, right? We laugh about this stuff. But the truth is that these accusations of satanic ritual abuse destroyed lives. Of course, we can't talk about satanic ritual abuse without talking about the McMartin trial, the McMartin daycare trial, the McMartin family accused of satanic ritual abuse of the children that they were charged over. And for almost a full decade, from 1983 to 1990, this was the trial that mesmerized the nation. It was featured on Geraldo Rivera's 1988 television special called Devil Worship, Exposing Satan's Underground. And he interviewed the parents of children who went to McMartin daycare. He talked to Anton LaVey's wife. He had Ozzy Osbourne on. And this piece of sensationalistic horseshit, Geraldo later had to come back and apologize for publicly, and well, he should, because Geraldo had been feeding on and feeding into one of the biggest lies of the late 20th century. How much of the insanity that we've just experienced here could have been averted if people had taken a fraction of the time they spent freaking and done a little fact-checking? For example, that Time Magazine interview with the creator of Pokemon? Well, it happened, but in the actual interview, the creator of Pokemon never spoke about a personal religious faith or lack of it. All he spoke about were the nuts and bolts of the development in the game, and that's it. The allegations that he had made it satanic were totally false. This, from Procter & Gamble, this logo was not satanic. It was created by dock workers in a hugely illiterate time where they couldn't read, so they used symbols to better identify the different shipping crates, the 13 stars representing the 13 colonies. It wasn't satanic. That's total crap. That interview on the Phil Donahue Show in 1994 never happened. In fact, versions of the story change out the talk show host, Sally Jesse Raphael, or maybe he was on Oprah. The story changes from person to person. But because of this big blow-up, Procter & Gamble ended up changing their logo to something else. How about this guy, the former Satanist high priest who found Jesus? Well, Cornerstone Magazine did a 1992 expose interviewing like 100 people who knew Mike Warkey during his life, and they found there was no supporting evidence for the claims he made that he was a Satanist. And when this went public, Mike Warkey's ministry imploded. How about this guy? Anton LaVey doesn't believe in a literal supernatural Satan. What about the Church of Satan that sacrifices animals and accosts and kidnaps our virgin girls and all that comes after your kids? What about that? Well, if you read the 11 satanic rules of the earth, it says do not harm little children and don't kill non-human animals unless you're attacked or for your food. Well, this is a revelation, isn't it? What about this 1980 book Michelle remembers? Someone finally fact-checked it and came to the conclusion that it's all complete horseshit. Like there's nothing to corroborate it. In fact, this one period of time that she was supposed to be enduring an 80-day-long satanic ritual, she had attendance, perfect attendance, at her school along with all the other students. And yet, this story fueled the satanic panic of the 1980s. The McMartin trial was based on what? The testimony of the children. Hugely problematic to begin with. Now, this is where we have to be careful. Because whenever young children come to us with accusations of abuse, we do need to listen, and we need to properly vet these claims. I'm not trying to be dismissive of the claims of abuse, but if you were to hear the claims of the children, and if they had been observed correctly at the front end of the discussion, how much pain might have been avoided, right? We have good reason to doubt the validity of these claims, and this was common. In these satanic ritual abuse charges, PBS did a Frontline special about satanic ritual abuse, talking about the suggestive interviewing techniques used. And this was very much the case, where they bring the young children in and they're like, were you abused? No. Did they touch you? No. Come on, Bobby. Don't you want to be a good boy? I'll give you a candy or whatever they do. In fact, HBO produced a film about this, a compelling 1995 movie called Indictment, the McMartin trial. I think you can still find it on HBO somewhere. The longest and most expensive trial in American history to that point, based on what? Fear, assumption, paranoia, zero convictions. Zero convictions, time lost, money wasted by the millions, lives devastated. How about this recent story of this Texas couple? They were sent to prison on satanic ritual abuse charges in the 90s. They were imprisoned falsely for 25 years and were only recently set free. Why? Because they got caught in this tidal wave of paranoia. All right, fine, Seth, we get it. Get to the point already. I hear you, my friends. Why dredge all this up today? What's the relevance of the satanic panic now? My point is this, my friends. The satanic panic is not over. The entire foundational narrative of Christianity revolves around what? The activity of and the warnings against God's arch enemy, the devil, his schemes, the one who deceives the world, the snare of the devil. He comes to steal and kill and destroy, and the whole world lies in his power. Recently, mega evangelist Billy Graham talked about Satan's ability to deceive. We should never think he is not to be feared. The warnings about the end times remain a huge part of Christianity's final chapter, the book of Revelation, still taught as if we live in the end times and the end is near. We got exorcism still going on across the planet. This guy alleged to have done more than 10,000. He passed away a couple years ago. More than 10,000 conducted by himself personally, according to his account. We see stories of people who were harmed or even killed through these exorcisms and various incarnations. What about rock music? The warnings about Satan in rock music, you think that's 80s? You think that's 90s? This is Texas megapastor John Hagee from just 3 years ago from a sermon he called, If I Were Satan.
I've had parents explain to me, well, I let my teenager listen to rock music because that's all he'll listen to. Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
Now, I can see the occasional temptation to burn an album. I mean, I'm just kidding. I got nothing against Nickelback. They're just a great punchline. Okay, they're just a great punchline. Why are Christians so freaked out by our friend Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple? Lucian, of course, joining us in the audience, and he's just a terrific guy. I enjoy following his work and what he does. Why do people flip out when they have the Ten Commandments monument? And he's like, cool, we're going to grab Baphomet. We'll be right there. We're going to put it up next to the Ten Commandments. Why do Christians freak out so much, right? Because they're terrified. It's the Satanic Temple. They're totally wigging out. Why is Pascal's wager still a thing in the 21st century? Well, I'd rather believe and be wrong. Because I don't want to go to hell. I'm afraid of hell. Why do we see churches promoting hell houses every October? This is the month of Halloween. We see these judgment houses or hell houses. They're haunted houses that are produced by the church, and they have biblical themes. And they drag these kids through and show them all manner of pain and blood and car wrecks and crime and abuse, just all sorts of nastiness. And then at the end of this gauntlet, they have counselors waiting at the door to lead children, young people, youths to meet Jesus Christ to become saved. The reason this works is because of Satan and the satanic panic. Why are churches still targeting and indoctrinating little children to fear and escape the devil? The satanic panic is alive and well. No matter how many love verses Christianity preaches, Christianity is at its very foundation a fear cult. From the beginning of the Bible to the end, the whole narrative hinges on having the antagonist against which the hero might play. From the serpent in the garden in the book of Genesis, the agent of Lucifer, who would come to steal and kill and destroy, to the Satan of Revelation, who will be bound for 1,000 years and ultimately destroyed, the devil is the linchpin for all of Christianity. He's the reason we should surrender to Jesus, the reason to accept God, the reason to line up and bow down and obey. It's so important that we break these chains of fear, to stop giving ourselves over to the irrational, the magical, the plays upon our greatest fears and the very human tendency to panic. We panic pretty easy, don't we? As a species, we are an evolved and evolving species. We have to open that closet door and discover that in regard to Satan and the supernatural, there simply is no monster in there. As one of my listeners said so aptly on Twitter, and I had to steal it and put it on screen, he said this, you know, it's sad when you have imaginary friends. It's even sadder when you have imaginary enemies. Right? For years, for decades, my friends, for decades, fear controlled me. It controlled me. Until thankfully, like so many of you, with the help and encouragement of others, you know, I found some amazing books at the right time, and I found some online communities at the right time, and I was reminded I wasn't alone in my questions at the right time. And, you know, thanks to many wonderful activists who helped me at a critical moment at that time, I was able to sort of turn my back on what is arguably religion's most powerful weapon, fear. I finally left Christianity and called myself an atheist in 2008. I was 38 years old. Now, there is no feeling, and those of you who've emerged from fundamentalism know exactly what I'm talking about. There is no feeling like breaking out of that cage, is there? There's no feeling. There's no way to really verbally describe this liberation and the joy and the freedom of living in the real world on my own terms. You know, and I'm desperate. I want to encourage other people
that they can do the same. You know, there's a whole universe out there waiting to be discovered and experienced and engaged in and enjoyed. There's a whole other life to live, and it's a much better life. You know, the satanic panic continues. But let the religious scaremongers come, my friend, because I, like so many of you, am liberated. I am free. I'm a citizen of the real world, living life on my terms. And I am not afraid. Thank you very much.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.